So there were two small town pastors with their collars on who stood by the side of the road one day. They were holding up a sign that said, "The end is near. Turn yourself around now before it's too late." And they planned to hold this sign up for each car that was coming down the road. And so they got very excited when they saw the first car. And so they held up their signs very enthusiastically. And the driver just kind of blows right past them, rolls down his window and goes, "Leave us alone, you religious nuts." So the car goes around the corner and then they hear this huge splash. And one of the pastors says to the other, "Do you think we should just put up a sign that says bridge closed instead?" Now, the readings we hear today fall under the heading of what is called apocalyptic literature. Now, what do you think of when you hear the word apocalypse? Many people think of the word end times, and some of us may remember the song from the band REM in the 1980s, "It's the End of the World as We Know It." Now, I don't know about you, but with wildfires in New York, the hottest year on record, terrible floods and hurricanes, conflicts around the world, and the recent election, thoughts of the apocalypse may not be that far from some of our minds. And while the word apocalypse has come to mean end times, the biblical meaning was not actually about trying to predict the end of the world. It actually means the unveiling. And so that kind of literature is trying to pull back the curtain and just show us that the present world order that we are living in is not God's plan for things. You know, as if like millions of years ago, God said, "I can't wait until 2024 when three individuals in the United States own more wealth than 200 million other people." That's not God's plan. And so this literature actually wants to remind us that someday God's plan will prevail. Now, we are not the first generation to feel like we're facing some end times. In fact, the books of Daniel that we heard from today and from the Gospel of Mark, they themselves were going through times that they thought were the end. And in recent years, I have turned more frequently to indigenous authors and guides as teachers on how to endure apocalypse. Stephen Charleston is an Episcopalian priest and also a Choctaw elder, and I've referenced him before. But he wrote a great book called "We Survived the End of the World: Lessons from Native America on Apocalypse and Hope." And he says that when he hears people talk about apocalypse these days, just in his mind, he goes, "Yeah, been there, done that." And so he describes how many of us know his people went through incredible devastation. They lost everything: homes, family members, language, food, way of life. And while only a remnant survived the genocide, they never lost sight of their hope or lost sight of a different future. And so he goes on to say that apocalyptic times produce apocalyptic prophets. And so he studied multiple indigenous prophets who arose in recent history to try to help and heal their people. And from his study, he distilled four lessons that these prophets might offer to the wider world. That's what I'd like to reflect with you on today. And so the lesson number one, and after I say it, I'm going to ask the congregation to repeat it back with me, just so we get a little extra repetition. Each of us is responsible for what is going on around us. Each of us is responsible for what is going on around us. So no matter how we got to this point in history, this is the point we are living in. And as a result, Charleston says that each of us needs to do our own personal work and not succumb to the blame game. Now, of course, different people and different groups have different levels of accountability and responsibility, but the burden falls to all of us somehow. And I love the saying from the Jewish Talmud that says, "You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it." So we must remain engaged during these times. And I don't mean we need to be on X, YouTube, or TikTok 24/7 with constant updates about what's happening today. Make sure you get rest, drink water, have spaces for joy and laughter, but don't disengage. The world in its current state is our responsibility. Now, one of my favorite movies is The Lion King. And you may remember a scene from The Lion King where Simba's been away from his kingdom for a while and he returns back and it is just in shambles. And so, but he says, hey, but this is my home. And so his little sidekick, Timon, elbows the guy next to him and he says, talk about your fixer-upper. And that's our world. We're living in a fixer-upper. But this is the only world that we have. Each of us must take responsibility for what is going on. Lesson number two, we each need to find a place and make a stand. We each need to find a place and make a stand. I mean, there are so many issues facing us these days, we can't do it all. So we need to do our own discernment of, you know, what are our capacities right now? Where's the best use of our gifts? What work enlivens us? So this past week, I had a chance to visit St. Andrew's Food Cupboard on Portland Avenue. I'd never been there before, but I was meeting Sue Lucchese, who's generally at the 7:30 Mass. And so Sue gave me a tour of the place, and she was just so excited about the work there. And I got to witness some of what they do, and it's quite amazing. But it was really inspiring to see her enthusiasm for the work. This is a place where Sue has decided to make a stand. Does it solve hunger and poverty? Of course not. But it is a concrete response to a current need, and it's actually helping to build the infrastructure of compassion and justice in this community. Now, it's also important to remember that the work of liberation in our world, it's got many faces. Street protest and disruption are only part of it. But making a stand might mean that you're doing more healing work or caregiving, might mean creating art or music, might mean building bridges between people, teaching, storytelling, community gardening. The goal isn't to try to do it all. The goal is to find our unique role or roles and support and encourage other people to find theirs, so that our movements for justice are balanced, diverse, and not reliant on any one person. Find a place, make a stand. Lesson number three, at the core of our survival is not technology, but relationships. At the core of our survival is not technology, but relationships. So I'm not sure why we have to keep reminding ourselves of this, but we often lose sight of this fundamental idea. Martin Luther King said it so well when he said, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. And lately on social media, I've seen posts that had this reflection written in 1946. By German Lutheran pastor Martin Niemöller called First They Came. And it says, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak. We are going to need to have each other's backs in the upcoming days, considering people as family, even if we have never met them. This might look like stocking community food pantries, or it might look like linking arms in front of a house where someone is about to be deported. It might mean taking extra time to get to know your neighbors, or getting involved with people you don't normally socialize with. But at the core of what lies in front of us is deepening relational connection and committing to collective care for one another. And when I speak of deepening relational connection, I don't mean only with the human world. I've always loved the idea from Robin Wall Kimmerer that instead of referring to the non-human world as it, we speak instead of them as relatives. And so she suggests we use the pronouns ki in the singular and kin in the plural. So when there's a flock of geese flying overhead, we would say, there goes our kin. When we eat food, we think about our kin who gave their lives that we might eat. And when a tree is cut down, we would say that key, a relative, has been lost. At the core of our survival is not technology, but relationships. Lesson number 4, we must say what is true and as much as possible lay the groundwork for reconciliation. We must say what is true and as much as possible lay the groundwork for reconciliation. Now, this may not be the message that we really want to hear right now, but Stephen Charleston says that no one can be outside of our circle of mercy. Someone came up to me after the 5 o'clock mass yesterday and said, yeah, but you don't know my brother. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry for you. But the person who voted differently from us is still in our family. The person who doesn't recycle, throws their trash out the window on the highway, it's still our family. Think of 3 categories of people that you don't particularly care for. Family, family, family. Now, we may not be prepared for or want to engage any of those folks right now, and that's okay. But ultimately, we're either going up together or we're going down together. And so at some point, we need to start doing some serious healing work. And when Charleston speaks of saying what is true, he's not just referring to the bad or hard stuff, which of course needs to be named. He also means that we have to keep naming and speaking about beauty and goodness, because there is still so much beauty and goodness in this world. There are so many caring people and so many worthwhile initiatives, and this community is just such a testimony to that. And so let's make sure that as we move forward, these things get our attention too, because we can't build a new world based on what we hate. It must be based on what we love. Now, I'm no conspiracy theorist, but the world we live in is governed by a small group of people who have arranged the world to their benefit. And this world works better for them when our senses are dulled or deadened. Their hold on the world is often an affective one, meaning that they try to make us feel like the only world is the one that's happening now, like it's inevitable. And this is the one they are offering to us or trying to sell to us. They benefit when we zone out. But the world we are in is not the inevitable one. And when we get into our bodies, feel our feelings, and use our imaginations, other worlds can appear. Say what is true and lay the groundwork for reconciliation. Now, in the midst of all this talk of apocalypse today, Jesus tells his followers, take a lesson from the fig tree. Jesus did this often in Scripture. He told his followers, consider the lilies, or look at the birds. And today, he wants us to consider the fig tree. And I think he meant it literally, that he wants nature to be our guide and our teacher. And so I tried it out. Recently, I was on a retreat at Notre Dame Retreat Center in Canandaigua. I hadn't been there in a long time. I was helping to facilitate a retreat on joy with Emmanuel Baptist Church. And there's this one maple tree that overlooks the lake. And this maple has lost all its leaves and was preparing for winter. And so I was not feeling a tremendous amount of joy that weekend because my heart was really heavy with the state of the world. And so I asked the maple tree a question. Well, first I asked permission to ask the maple tree a question, and hearing no protest, I proceeded. And I said, in all genuineness, how do you do it? Like, how do you hold on to joy? And I heard these words inside me as clear as day. I can't run, so I will bloom. And I can't think of any better advice for the times we're living in right now. Don't run. Bloom. Don't get sucked into the anxiety. Bloom. Don't despair. Bloom. Take in whatever light you can and bloom wherever and whenever and with whoever you can. Bloom and help others bloom. Lay the foundations for flowering. Now, it's probably no great insight that things are probably going to get worse before they get better. So we might have to keep repeating Charleston's four lessons. We are each responsible for what is going on around us. We need to find a place and make a stand. In the end, it's all about relationships. And whenever possible, speak truth and lay the groundwork for reconciliation. It will not be easy, but God never said it would be easy, especially during an apocalypse. So in the days ahead, may we lean on each other, may we lock arms, take deep breaths, and lay the groundwork for a world where all may fully bloom.